I hear the whistle blow. I'm looking for a train. When I hear the thunder roll, I know it's gonna rain. Could just be a joke. I'm not calling you a lie. But oh baby, I smell smoke. There's got to be a fire. When I hear talk behind my back, my ears begin to burn. When a black cat crosses my path, oh, my luck is about to turn. It could just be a joke. I'm not calling you a lie. But oh baby, I smell smoke. That's got to be a fire.
Oh yeah. Benny Neal on guitar. He's also the composer of the song called I Smell Fire. This is from his 2000 album, What You've Got. He is not only singing and he's playing the guitar, he also plays a harmonica. What do you call a person who plays a harmonica? Is it a harmonicist? Harmonicaist? I don't even know. But he is very good at it. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we smell smoke. So there's got to be a fire. And if it is Charles Ortel is in the house, there's got to be a fire. Hello, Charles.
I can hear you perfectly well, Eutrice.
Okay, now I can hear you perfectly well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. I hope everything's good with you.
Sure. There's a lot of smoke that we're smelling lately, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But I just wanted to preface this. We talked a little bit yesterday. Yesterday was like my alter ego did the program yesterday. And we talked a bit about philanthropy and what it means and what it's supposed to mean. And at the same time, I know I was conscious of the fact that we've been talking about philanthropy gone way wrong. And that is specifically referring to Bill and Hill and now Chelsea, the Clinton Foundation. All right, so let's get started. Tell us what's the latest news with the Clinton Foundation.
Sure. So just quickly on the subject of philanthropy, when you think about philanthropy, which is a fancy way of talking about charity, most people, when they are introduced to a, quote, philanthropist, let their guard down because they, you know, it's tough out here in the real world where you're trying to make money and pay your bills and, you know, in a dream scenario, have enough money left over to actually save for your future. Very tough to do that in the gig economy, the modern economy. And that's an issue not just, you don't have to look at it through political terms. You look at it through human terms. If you've got a partner and a family and you know, you feel some responsibility for keeping a roof over everyone's head and working together on that project to feed one another and make sure you've got health care and all that kind of stuff. It's really a dangerous place if you have nothing left over at the end of each week and you got debts that are mounting and you're trying to think about a better life for your children. So when you meet somebody who is so well off that they're actually giving away their money, you say, this person must be pretty special. And so it has become, I think, a cloak for fraudsters to set up these fake charities, because particularly celebrity fraudsters, people who get around, fraudsters who get around celebrities. And I fear that, and one of the reasons I landed on this Clinton Foundation was when I saw just how big a fraud it actually had become. And I noticed that it had been, nobody had bothered to get to the bottom of the problem, despite there having been multiple investigations beginning as early as February 2001. So when I saw that, I said, now, there's got to be one whopping hell of a story here to tell. Eventually, it's going to come out into the open, and it'll be a lot like a case we've talked about in the past when I started pounding on General Electric in 2007, warning people about the dangers there. Initially, people said, ah, Charles, come on. I mean, you know, General Electric, everybody's looking at it. If there were a problem, it would have come to light. Well, that turns out not to be the case. If you have these big things that are really too big to think about, and it's too big to imagine what might happen if it's actually a fraud, then people just suspend their critical judgment. They don't engage, put their brains in drive, look at the facts, and say, you know, if this thing was supposed to be a presidential archive and research center in Little Rock, where they allegedly spent $160 million, even though 7 years earlier, the George H.W. Bush Library came together for a price of like $43 million in a more expensive state, Texas, than Arkansas. You know, if you're supposed to spend $160 million on a presidential library, how come they've raised $3 billion? How come they're doing stuff all over the world? Where's the legal authority for all that? How come states haven't actually asked these type of tough questions? Why are so many donors willing to part with so much money for such a leaky operation that has trustees who are hopelessly conflicted, or either political or business allies or both of the Clintons? It's got an accounting firm that, frankly, you know, I said it's an insult to jokes to call this accounting firm BKD a joke. They were in the saddle supposedly looking, auditing, which means stress testing the financial statements for an entity that had no legal authority to do any work outside a specific portion of Little Rock. Yet they affixed their name to multiple sets of purported audits beginning for the year 2001 right the way through 2012. They went back in and allowed their name to be affixed to tax returns, amended tax returns for the Clinton Foundation on November 16th, 2015. So there's such a whopping tail here, and it cuts across Republicans and Democrats because, sadly, obviously when Bill was president, they weren't going to do any tough looking at this foundation, it would seem. But why for 8 years when George W. Bush was president did nobody take a tough look at this? So why aren't there nonpartisan people checking that all American charities, particularly charities that claim they can operate internationally, why isn't there an empowered nonpartisan team looking at all that, particularly in a period when, you know, we can attack both parties and say, back when Bill Clinton left the White House, he did at least one good thing. This is Charles Rattell talking. So, I mean, I hope you're not on the floor laughing. But he did at least one good thing, and that is... All right, at least you're not on the floor, you're just laughing. So he did one good thing, which is he had a budget surplus in the year 2000, which was very difficult to achieve because that was a year where we had a stock market crash looming because of the internet bubble bursting. So he was the last American president to actually produce a federal budget surplus was Bill Clinton. We had people in the business press saying that maybe there wouldn't be any more issuances of U.S. government debt, federal government debt. And look what happened first under Bush with the ruinous and expensive Middle East misadventures that have cost us trillions of dollars financially and have, you know, hurt many families and departed soldiers and wounded soldiers and not just Americans, but of many nationalities, and has arguably lessened our standing at the end of the day, or moral authority or authority to project power for good outside our borders. And then we have, of course, the Obama years where he piled on massive amounts of debt. So when you have these charities and you set them up so that they're not really being regulated properly, and then you game the IRS by not giving it enough resources, what you have are slush funds. You have the potential for people to open bank accounts around the world, powerful people, and route money to dynastic political families in the guise of charity, because there are no controls, there's no, you know, tension, there are no tough trustees standing up to the Clintons and saying, wait a minute, the Clinton family absolutely cannot take control of the Clinton Foundation as they did or attempted to do on November 2nd, 2013 in the dead of night. You can't just change the bylaws of a public charity and stipulate that the Clinton family will control the operation at board meetings, between board meetings, and have, you know, ultimate say over everything going on with an entity that's supposed to be independent of a single family. Can't do that, but they did do that. So when you set up this type of a slush fund, it becomes a way for people who want to bank on the Clintons to take a tax deduction for money that otherwise, if you're going to fund a political campaign, is not tax deductible, and maybe even to claim a tax deduction greater than the value of your donation, because with a leaky charity, you could say, if you've got a crooked trustees and you've got crooked accounts, you could say you gave it $1 million inside the United States of America, but you could have a side deal in the Bahamas or the Cayman Islands or whatever to fly your private plane down and, you know, get $500,000 back. So with that, with those type of controls, absence of controls, you have a situation where the American taxpayer is out a lot of money here, because this thing, in my mind, never was formally organized or operated as a separate, distinct, independent entity as required. So a tough IRS commissioner might take the view, whether the name is Clinton, Obama, Bush, or whatever, that these loosely controlled non-entities were nothing more than appendages of the individuals involved, and therefore, in the toughest possible case, you could argue this is all personal income, and there should have been personal income taxes paid first on the revenues, and then one would decide whether expenses claimed were actually deductible or not. And you would then present the Clintons and the Obamas and the Bushes with massive tax bills, which is the way the IRS normally functions against tax cheats. They go in and they say, you know, we don't believe any of this, any of your returns. You have a limited amount of time, typically 30 to 90 days, to prove to us, you have the burden of proof to the IRS, to prove to us that you're a charity, validly organized and operated in each legal jurisdiction. Otherwise, we're going to start seizing your assets to get money back. And then beyond that, we're going to work with the Department of Justice to decide how many of you belong in prison, like Corinne Brown, who's in prison for an $800,000 fraud, five years in federal prison, a former congressperson from Florida.
Right. I was just going to say she was a former congresswoman from Florida, yes.
Yeah, and Steve Stockman, a Republican, Corinne is a Democrat, and Steve Stockman is a Republican who faces federal prison for around $1 million charity fraud. I mean, this thing is $3 billion declared, and who knows how much undeclared. My estimate is probably in the hundreds of billions. So the latest is that I've discovered that in the general public, most people they hate math. They hate financial statements. They hate accounting. You start talking to people about, you know, a math problem, and you lose 95% of them. And so you have to relentlessly pound it, which, thanks to you, Utrice, we've been doing. And in various media formats, I've been doing now for 4 years. It's almost 4 years to the day that I started this, March 16th, 2015. And where, in the beginning, the Clintons, you know, had a majority of people saying, hey, this is good work. I mean, this is bipartisan stuff. Bill's palling around with George H.W. and George W. They're doing Katrina. They're doing Haiti. They're doing tsunami. They're doing all this. Isn't that wonderful? And, then you start looking at the facts and you realize this thing is a complete fraud. It has never had a legitimate audit. It has never filed legitimate tax returns. It has never declared all its income. It's put a bunch of phony expenses through here. It's pursued all sorts of things that are not, in fact, charity, and that are rather just naked business development, business aggrandizement, investment activity around the world, making people rich, making donors rich. There's an element of corruption here, I believe, in making donations to the foundation so that donors get back off-market contracts or other deals around the world. And we're starting to see that with the passage of time, Democrats have become less and less interested in perpetuating this Clinton fraud. And now as we approach the 2020 election, so far Hillary has not announced. I don't believe basically anything she says, but I don't believe her claim that she's not running. But at this stage, with so many other people declared, it has got to be in the Democratic Party interest to make sure that Hillary Clinton's campaign doesn't rise from the dead yet again. And so what I'm seeing is a lot less interest on the Democrats' part of trying to defend this fraud. And then beyond that, what we're starting to see, you know, when you take water and you let it run against something for 4 years, eventually it pierces through stone. And that's what's happening here, I think, that the Department of Justice, the IRS, Mueller, and others have been doing their best to obstruct the public's ability to see what was really going on. But now the answer to your short question is that in the last several days, we have learned from Peter Strzok's text messages and testimony before Congress that indeed the Clinton Foundation was under investigation in 2016, and that by late May 2016, which is, I think, Beatrice, just about the time you and I started going on air together, late May 2016, the FBI became aware of Hillary Clinton emails that had been belatedly turned over or that the FBI had recovered, which had extensive mention of the Clinton Foundation in them, as I had long ago suspected and mentioned on air many times and in print. And instead of, you know, we think to the Manafort case, you're supposed to investigate Manafort for Russian collusion. Instead, they raid his house to make a big deal about, you know, income tax problems. Similarly here, they were supposed to be investigating Russian collusion. They find in these emails evidence of potentially criminal activity involving the Clinton Foundation. And what do they do? They say, we're not going to look at that. And this is an area, you know, if we're going to have tough laws, which I think we do need in many places, if we're going to have laws against fraud, they have to be, you know, applied based on the facts. You have to sort of, just the way exams in theory are scored, where you take the student's name off the paper and you grade it blind, same way here. And if you're going to hire a special counsel, we can get into the issue of whether that was done properly, but let's assume for a moment it was done properly. And that special counsel has a mission to find evidence of collusion, but finds evidence of something that we send people away to prison for many, many years in much smaller amounts. When that special counsel and Department of Justice discovers evidence, and when there are multiple people, not just me and not just you, Utrecht, multiple people in this time frame saying, wait a minute, this Clinton Foundation reeks, and the record reeks, particularly when Hillary was Secretary of State, and they find something, the FBI wants to investigate it, and the Department of Justice says, no. That, you know, when you weave that into the timeline of that supposedly happening around late May 2016, then you have the Loretta Lynch tarmac meeting with, you know, the totally by accident, unscripted tarmac meeting on June 27th, 2016, right in this moment. And you have me and others pounding and saying there's a fraud here at the Clinton Foundation. Let's jump. You have Marsha Blackburn, then a congressman, now a senator from Tennessee, issuing a letter in July saying, you know, investigate this Clinton Foundation. She had done the same thing in 2015, and of course the FTC and the IRS and others laughed at her, both in 15. But by late July 2016, the then head of the IRS, John Koskinen, was forced to issue a press release saying that in response to Blackburn's request, he had directed the Dallas office of the IRS to look at this thing. So this, I think, this recent disclosure of the testimony of Strzok and the fact that Congress knew about it 6 months ago, if not earlier, you know, must be prompting the few legitimate journalists who remain in the mainstream to say, now, wait a minute. You know, we have been almost now 2 years on this Russian collusion delusion, and here we're learning, you know, no one's been able at the Clinton Foundation to demonstrate that I'm wrong, that any of the claims that I've made are wrong. Now, four years of
that. I mean, there's history to prove that you kind of know what you're doing. You were the one who blew the whistle on Wall Street companies, corporations that were overvaluing their stock. And that's how GE was exposed. Nobody was listening. Although you repeatedly presented to the public, I mean, this was not a closed investigation. You initiated this investigation on your own, and you showed how these companies were ripping off their investors by overinflating the value of their stock. If somebody were in the field of journalism from that point on until now, and they see the name Ortel, and they see the name, they see the subject matter being fraud, I would, you know, my ears would perk up and say, well, what is he up to now? What is he exposing now? And you call this the biggest fraud, the biggest unprosecuted fraud in U.S. history. And it so happens to involve a former president, a former secretary of state, their daughter, a whole bunch of other actors who just flip in and out of these entities that they form, supposedly to do good charitable work all over the world, garnering billions, that's with a B, billions of dollars in funds and donations from all over the world, and they're in the catbird seat. Nothing is happening to them, no investigations demanding that they produce evidence that, in fact, they were flying right from the very beginning. When the corporation was formed, I should say the nonprofit was formed, they weren't flying right then. When Bill Clinton decided what this nonprofit will do is help finance the building of a presidential library, which will be located in Arkansas, and people could come and at their leisure read and research and do all these other kinds of things based on my presidency. And by the way, I kind of resent this business that every president has to have a presidential library. But
I agree.
We see, though, that I'm observing, we're seeing that people are beginning to ask questions. The right people are beginning to ask questions, and all over the world, in France, in Britain, you know, questions are being asked. We gave millions or hundreds of millions of dollars to these so-called charities that you were running. What happened to them? Where's the accounting for them? So are we getting closer to the curtain descending on the Clinton Foundation?
In my opinion, yes. So here are some of the traps that are set, I think, for the Clinton Foundation. In the first instance, I just want to preface these remarks by saying that under American law and many other countries, what's going on in criminal investigations is confidential. So, you know, I don't expect, nor do I have, information concerning the status of the interest in any criminal investigations that may be occurring around the world. But just watching how other frauds have been policed, watching the amount of attention that has been placed here, and noticing the fact that, you know, I haven't received any threatening letters from anybody saying stop bringing up this Clinton Foundation fraud, it is my educated guess that it is under active investigation. And there have indeed been press accounts as early as January 2018. There were extensive press reporting of the FBI is investigating this thing. If the real line officers of the FBI have been investigating, the forensic accountants and others who could pierce through, take any work that I have been laying out there in the public domain and take it to a much higher level of specificity, if they've been working on this thing since January of 2018 and they have not seen the fraud, then we have very big problems at the FBI that needs to be just wound up. Because if they haven't seen this fraud, they haven't appreciated its consequence. And if Donald Trump's people haven't understood by now that policing fraud at these presidential foundations involving dynastic political families of both parties, the policing fraud that extends to the donors, the biggest donors in the world, the Gates Foundation, the big universities, many other large foundations, if they don't understand that this is a great way to drain the swamp by now, then they won't win re-election in 2020, which may be something that your listeners would like to hear. But on the other hand, if we care about draining the swamp, this is a great way to do it. So my belief is that a lot of work has been done, is going on now at federal level, at state levels, internationally, in regulatory bodies, looking at the accountants involved, looking at both the firms and the people. One thing I should mention is that I was not fully aware of the idea that when you talk to a certified public accountant about getting an audit done on your company or charity or whatever, that accountant actually has a primary obligation to the public, not to you. And so if that accountant discovers criminal activity, fraudulent activity, problems, whatever, that accountant needs to come forward. And when the criminal proceedings move forward, if they do, an accountant cannot hide behind any kind of privilege. And when people start questioning that accountant about, you know, what was your client telling you about what they were doing, and did you suspect your client was illegally soliciting money when you realized that all it could do was be a library and research center in Little Rock, and you notice these guys flying around the world and spending $10 million a year on travel and doing all sorts of stuff in Africa and Asia that didn't seem to be anywhere authorized. Well, you know, why didn't you react to that? You have to ask those questions, and you can't say, well, no, I can't tell you, my talks with my client are confidential. You don't have that protection as an accountant. So on the one hand, on the substance, you know, I'll say again, yesterday the Clinton Foundation needs to have a conservator appointed. All the affiliates that are posing as charities need to have their current trustees removed. They need to be new trustees put in. There need to be forensic accounting firms hired to figure out, you know, how much money may have gone missing and where might it have gone. Donors, the many, many private foundation donors in the U.S. that have given money to these frauds, they need to be disciplined. And the truth, the sunlight needs to shine on this. If it touches the Bush Foundation, so be it. If it touches the Gates Foundation, so be it. This needs to be laid out in the open so that the public can have a frank discussion of, you know, whether nonprofit can be a dirty word. Because after all, you know, I'm not an apologist for the profit-seeking sector, but when you have a bunch of people getting together trying to make more money, they tend to look very carefully at the books. And in the nonprofit world, it would seem to be the opposite, that, you know, not enough care and attention is given to these large vanity nonprofits, which seem to me to be used too often as ways to polish up the image of the supposed donors and the supposed executives and trustees. We need to have a hard look at this, not simply at the Clinton Foundation, but I've talked to you in the past, you, Teresa, and I'm working on now, at these nameplate educational institutions, the Harvards, the Yales, the Princetons, the Columbias, et cetera. Now, are donors to these large institutions with gigantic endowments that are charging their students enormous amounts of money per year and allowing their professors to make high salaries and pensions and other benefits and free housing and also go off and do allied work, whether it be speaking or if it's in professional areas and, you know, setting up venture funds or private equity funds or whatever on the side. Do these institutions at this stage in 2019 deserve to be fully tax exempt, particularly when they don't police their own names closely enough and allow things like the Clinton Foundation to run around the world under the supposed cover of Harvard and Yale and Columbia and other places, you know, pretending that they're a charity when they're not a charity? I mean, in Harvard,
why has there not been a flurry of activity in the advocacy world, in the nonprofit sector, demanding, you know, it seems as if people just waiting for the government to do something. why has there not been a demand and an accompanying exposure of the facts that would justify the demand for serious inquiries into these pseudo-charitable organizations?
Well, I think there are two reasons for it, at least two reasons. One of the reasons is Lindsay McGooey, I think it's spelled M-C-C-O-E-Y from memory. It might be M-C-G-O-E-Y, I forget which. But anyway, she wrote a book called No Such Thing as a Free Gift. And in it, the Gates Foundation comes in for particularly harsh criticism. And the reality, and people love to talk about in finance equality, but the reality is that the assets of foundations are distributed inequitably, that a very small number of foundations controls an overwhelming percentage of assets. And the largest of these is the Gates Foundation. So in the not-for-profit world, many, many evaluators of charities and people who will mouth off about charity or whatever are dependent on donors like the Gates Foundation and others to stay afloat. So it would be one thing to criticize a $100 million charity, but when you're talking about criticizing something that's $30, $40, whatever it is, billion, and you have an annual budget, let's say, of $2 million, you're going to think twice about passing off against the Gates Foundation and other large Ford Foundation, et cetera. So that's one reason. Same is true, of course, with Harvard, Yale, and Columbia. I mean, if you want your kids to get into those schools or you're trying to get into those schools or whatever reason, you want the imprimatur of a Harvard, Yale, or Columbia or whatever, pick a big brand name Ivy League school, you're going to think twice about criticizing. And, fortunately, I'm happy to criticize Harvard and Yale, two places I attended, because I think institutions with the reputations they have to march to the beat of a different drummer. They have to set the standard. They cannot allow the kind of shenanigans that have gone on in alliance. They can't allow the Clinton Foundation. They can't give the Clinton Foundation the cover they've given them without some kind of penalty. And I think that penalty should be severe, not just in terms of monetary. I think there needs to be. I remember back at the time of Enron and all that when, people justifiably were furious at the corporate, illegality and fraud that was going on. It was the Harvards and the Yales and the college campuses that were ranting and raving about, the for-profit economy and ethics and the need for this and the need for that. The same sort of attention needs now to be placed on the non-for-profit world. In addition, when you set up a Harvard as an educational enterprise, it's supposed to be independent of political dogma. It's not supposed to be a hothouse for progressivism or conservatism or anything else. It's supposed to be a place where free thinking, responsible free thinking is encouraged, where controversial ideas are vetted, where the status quo is considered from all sorts of perspectives to see whether we're moving in step or falling behind. And instead, these large educational institutions, particularly ones that have big names, where it's worth something to give, if you have the money, to say that you're a $50 million donor to Harvard, because around the world people will say, wow, if Harvard took $50 million of his or her money, then this person must be super special. I had a friend who shall remain nameless, who is a good person, who shocked me by saying at one point, that the way this person looked at charity is that they always got back financially many more dollars than they ever gave to any charity. I heard that. I said, what? That's not the way charity is supposed to work. And sadly, that is the way too many charities work. And it's really time, to look at this whole area dispassionately, not from a conservative standpoint or a progressive standpoint, but from just an American standpoint. People here, we've got an expensive government. Somebody has to pay for it. Why is it that these large operations of people who should know better, the Clintons, the Obamas, the Bushes, why, do they set these things up, stray from their authorized purposes, loosely control these operations, allow them to become conduits for the advancement of their political and personal fortunes and operations, all the while taking the benefit of allowing donors, you know, to deduct contributions from their tax returns, diluting our charity, and all the while accumulating excesses, the difference between revenue and expenses, without paying any taxes. And then, on top of that, in the case of Harvard and Yale and Columbia, not paying local property taxes because you're a charity.
You're listening to PRN.FM. I'm Beatrice Lee. The program is we delving into the business, and we continue from yesterday on charities. And this is an ongoing discussion that we have been having with Charles Ortel, who single-handedly has taken on this subject area and has caused a great deal of concern as a one person doing this kind of research. If you want to ask questions of Charles Ortel, call 888-874-4888. He's available. He'll take your questions. Please make sure you have a question and it's kind of short so that we could accommodate as many people as possible. 888-874-4888. While we wait for questions, Charles, do you expect any time in the near future, considering that Hillary Clinton is increasingly showing her face and, you know, making it all about her, whether she's going to run or she's not going to run, blah, 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 which is another way of testing the waters. Do you expect that there would be some definitive action with respect to the Clintons?
Well, I say this every year that there's a tax return deadline. November 15th this year, 2019, is the final deadline for filing. If that does not fall on a weekend, is the final filing deadline for their informational return with the IRS. And you know, this will be the first year that you have an IRS commissioner in the saddle who is not a holdover appointee, the first year that you have an attorney general who is not conflicted Jeff Sessions, I should say conflicted and ineffective Jeff Sessions. And so there has been a lot of focus. We're beginning to see more focus in the mainstream, particularly with this college cheating scandal. Yes. I didn't give you the second reason why it's taking so long. If you read the indictment, in the first indictment on the college cheating scandal, you see the degree to which the FBI and the Department of Justice can put a case together when they want to. We've been talking. I write. I go on videos and TV and stuff like that. But it's yet another thing to produce a written indictment which explains the facts and the variance from the laws and the laws themselves. And then, in addition, has cooperating witnesses go on tape with targets and get the targets to admit on tape, on wiretap, that they've committed crimes. That's what you see. Very cleverly, actually, in that indictment involving the college cheating scandal, which is a whole other subject, you see the cooperating witnesses tell the same tale to multiple donors. You know, you get them to admit what they did, that they paid large sums to get their daughter or son or both into these places. And then the rub that I found very interesting and tantalizing was the confidential witness would then say, you know, I just got audited by the IRS. For this tiny little charity, which is really, you know, all told that I've seen so far, $7 million in total revenues, we just got audited for the IRS, and we need to get our story straight, is what the confidential witness says, and to these various parties. And one of them is so bold as to say, you know, what do you think I am, stupid? I mean, obviously we need to get our story straight, you know. So in the case of this, the first thing I on that is, well, wait a minute, if the IRS is going to audit a charity whose total declared returns are $7 million, why in the heck is the IRS not all over every single Clinton Foundation charity? And then and there are many of them, about 10 by my count, you know, current and past, and why is the IRS all over the donors to the Clinton Foundation, of which there are many in the U.S. that should be in fact audited and punished? So
from Connecticut, you're on the air. You're on the air with Charles Ortel.
Yes, Charles, I can't thank you enough for your tireless efforts here. I started listening to you when you first appeared on Utrecht's show. You know, and then all this kerfuffle about you know, the Trump Foundation, which I'm sure has significant deficiencies. But the Southern District Court seemingly jumping on the bandwagon for Trump bashing, totally overlooking any of these irregularities that you've detailed about the Clinton Foundation, is really stunning to me. I can't believe. And when I try and explain to any of this, because I, you know, Connecticut, and I have relatives in New York and all this, today, you mention anything about the Clintons, and they're like pristine. Oh my God, they helped people with AIDS, and they rebuilt Haiti, and they were audited. Didn't you see that? Here's how they were audited. And you cannot pierce that bubble of that facade of their deity. You know, it's just horrific.
Yeah, it's obviously here. I live in, I won't say where, but I live in Manhattan. And, you know, as bad as your problem is in Connecticut, imagine what it's like in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
But what I would say to you is, if you want some ammunition, one of the things I've been doing with a great guy, Jason Goodman, who's an NYU Film School graduate, Hollywood veteran, we will be doing tomorrow our 150th two-hour podcast, which you can find on YouTube by just Google Sunday with Charles and playlist. And there what we do is we provide you as well evidence. We provide you links, a slide presentation that you can pull down off the Internet with multiple links. And, you know, there's some people you're just never going to convince. There's a guy I sort of whoop up on him a little bit. Joe Connison is a famous author. You know, and he's a good writer. But, you know, to this day, he's still defending the Clinton frauds. The simple way to answer the question of, you know, the HIV/AIDS stuff is, are you aware, whoever this person is, that the only thing the Clinton Foundation was ever authorized to do was to be a presidential archive and research center in a specific park inside Little Rock? That's it.
Thanks, Tom, for your question and your comment. Gene from Maryland, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice, and thank you. Charles,
I
just love it when you're on, and I am a listener of Sunday with Charles as well, just to let you know, and you. I think your work is outstanding. Questions for you. With all of the work that you have done, the detailed documentation, et cetera, what is the reluctance of the FBI, the Justice Department, the IRS, to simply pick up your work and use that to bring a case? The second issue, or second question, is as we're seeing all of this stuff unfolding, where the Justice Department and Mueller's reporting and all of this stuff that's going on against the president, there seems to be a number of close encounters between the investigators and the Clintons. Could you touch on both of those points for me?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for those questions. So I think, you know, one of the reluctances to really go after this hard starts actually with the related Clinton email investigation. And the question, the tough question of, no, wait a minute, who approved the Clintons to have to operate their foundation and Hillary, the Secretary of State, to operate all the while for 4 years and then afterwards the business, important international business of this country over an unsecure set of private servers in D.C. and New York and maybe elsewhere, and unsecured devices? Who authorized that? And I think, as a guess, that the highest levels, maybe not Barack Obama himself, but somebody pretty high up had to approve that. And the question begs, if Hillary had such a system, is it possible that other Obama cabinet officials had a similar system? And that is, if so, that could be an area that, you know, people would be most reluctant to admit, because it would implicate not just the Clintons, but maybe the Obamas and others. So that's one reason. The Clintons, we need to remember, you know, they're from Arkansas, at least, you know, Bill is, and they moved to New York in 99 when Hillary bought the house in Chappaqua, or I think it was 99, and they've had an opportunity to seed acolytes all over the place in New York, in the city government, the state government, the federal offices. So they have a lot of friends who, in theory, are in jobs that are not political jobs, but that are
nakedly partisan and pro-Clinton. So they've had the ability to stiff-arm the system. And indeed, you know, they have legendary Rolodexes, each of them, or contact lists, each of them. So they have lots of allies amongst the influence shapers, particularly in media, et cetera. So they've been able to stall the system. There's one particularly powerful gentleman, Robert Barnett, who's with Williams and Connolly Law Firm in D.C., who's a major player in the swamp, in my opinion. And there are a limited number now, with the power concentrated in media land, there are a limited number of firms that can take politicians from obscurity in the business sense and then, you know, give them book deals and give them TV deals and film deals and corporate deals and investment deals. And so, you know, these people, who are powerful, many of them, are running scared. They don't want to see this scandal emerge on top of the Me Too scandal, now the college scandal, other scandals. They just don't want to see it out there. So they're stiff-arming it. But I think it's thanks to people like you and Utrice and the listeners and viewers. People are fed up with this. You know, we're fed up with corruption. We're fed up with the swamp. We pay, all of us pay together, nearly $7 trillion a year on government. We deserve to get more for it. And one way to cut the swamp, the heart of the swamp out, is to expose it via the Clinton Foundation investigation.
Thanks a lot for your question. E from Edgewater, how are you? You're on the air.
I'm fine. Thank you, Therese. I hope you're fine, too. And thank you very much, Charles, for all that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. Not only am I fine, I'm fine.
Oh, that's great. I'm just...
I'm fine. So what's your question for Charles?
Well, it's more of a comment because my fear is that Clinton's, in my estimation, have done even worse things than this foundation. And there's been many people who are willing to come forward and testify against the Clintons. And the scenario was always the same. They ended up dead, and they were said to have committed suicide for some reason just before they were ready to testify against these two people. I also fear that Hillary's whole reason for running for president wasn't to become the president. She wanted to get her friend Donald Trump to be the president so he could take all the attention from them onto himself. And now they're out of the limelight, and he's in the limelight. These are things that I fear, that the system is so corrupt that they're protecting people like the Clintons who have committed such egregious crimes against humanity, that the whole system is the same way, and there's nobody really to do anything about it, and we're out here in the water with sharks all around us. This is what I fear, Charles. Can you have a comment on that?
Sure. You know, when I decided to go into any of these investigations, I tried to think carefully about what the risks were, and obviously, you know, the non-charity part of the Clinton life, there have been many vexatious incidents that deserve close scrutiny. One thing that's different about the charity land is the laws are different, and the statute of limitations are different for conspiracies and obstruction of justice, et cetera. So on substance, I think we have the weight on our side, and the people who may be swimming with sharks are the Clintons. And they may already be bloodied. And we know what happens to bloodied people in salt water when there's sharks swarming around. So it's a question of time. And I think if we all sit here, you know, this is a participatory democracy, this country. Every one of us has the right to vote, to speak up, to complain, to suggest, etc. And this is a time where people across the political spectrum should be rising up and saying, listen, charity is fantastic when done properly. It sets this country apart in a positive light. Here are people abusing charity for a personal gain. They belong in prison. No one is too big to jail. When people speak up, speak truth to power, we win. And so thank you for listening and caring. And I certainly care and I'm trying to speak up a little bit. And I can tell you, I'm encouraged.
Thank you. Well, Charles, that brings us to the end of our program today. What could you leave us with as something that you think is on the horizon?
Well, I would be watching the politics in the major countries that have been Clinton Foundation donors. So in Canada, Justin Trudeau has been, I think, obstructing, or his people have been obstructing an investigation into Canadian donations to the Clinton Foundation. He's in trouble. In Norway, there has been Clinton mania for a long time. That's changing now. The mood in Norway is changing. Of course, you see the yellow vest stuff going on. In Australia, it's changing. In New Zealand, it's changing. So internet across the world, people are getting less willing to put up with corrupt governments and former leaders going from poverty into multimillionaire status. So I look for that, what's happening there. And then I watch closely the revelations from people like John Solomon and Sarah Carter, and I'd watch this college cheating scandal carefully. I think focus is going to the right places here, and I can't predict when justice will come for the Clintons, but justice is en route.
Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us today. I just want to remind everyone, Charles is on YouTube. You can check out Sunday with Charles and catch up with his many filings in between, of course, his appearances here. But we are going to continue our journey into the Clinton Foundation and related matters as we go. Thanks, Charles, for being with us today. Always appreciate that you set aside time. You've always been accessible, and this is really refreshing. Thank you so much.
My great pleasure.
Thank you. Well, that does it for today. So we'll kind of... my earpiece is giving me some trouble here. We'll connect again tomorrow, same time. And I want you to pass the word around. Tell your friends what programs you listen to on PRN, and tell them about the station, and tell them the wonderful things that you have encountered and come in contact with and that have elevated your mind. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Just be a joke. I'm not calling you a lie.